Four Flags by Evelyn Waugh. Dramatized in three parts by Dennis Hawthorne. With Simon Cadell as Basil Seal, Tony Britton as the narrator, and Leslie Sharp as Doris. Part 2. Winter.
Winter set in hard. Poland was defeated. East and west, the prisoners rolled away to slavery. Russia invaded Finland, and the papers were full of tales of white-robed armies scouting through the forests. English soldiers on leave brought back reports of the skill and daring of Nazi patrols, and of how much better the blackout was managed in Paris. The leaves fell in the avenue at Moultrie, and this year, where once there had been a dozen men to sweep them, there were now only four and two boys. 2 days before Christmas, Freddy's regiment was moved to another part of the country, and Barbara found herself alone. An intense cold settled on the house. Several families of evacuees were quartered in the guest wing, but only the orangery was kept really warm. Barbara had her writing table put there, and sat absurdly among tropical vegetation, while outside, beyond the colonnade, the ground froze hard, and the trees stood out white against the leaden sky. Soon after Christmas, there was a great fall of snow, and with the snow came Basil.
Darling, this is very nice. Have you come to stay?
Yes. Mother said you were on your own.
I don't know where I'll put you. The house is virtually sealed up. We can only heat the tiniest corner. You haven't brought anyone else, have you?
No, no one. There isn't anyone nowadays. I've come to write a book.
Oh, darling, is it as bad as that?
What do you mean?
Darling, whenever things are bad with you, you start to write a book. You never get very far with them. I suppose that says something about your ability to bounce back. Mm. What's this one about?
Chiefly, it's the case for the annexation of Liberia, but I shall touch on several other vital places as well. Can I have a drink?
Of course. Mother said you were joining the Bombardier Guards.
Yes. Nothing came of it. They say they want younger men. Typical army paradox. They say we're too old now and they'll call us up in 2 years' time. I shall bring that out in my book. The only logical policy is to kill off the old first while there's still some kick in them.
Here you are, darling. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, it's very nice to see you. I've been lonely.
I've been lonely.
What's happened to everyone?
You mean Angela? She's gone home.
Home?
That house we used to call Cedric's Folly. It's hers, really, of course. Cedric's gone back in the army. So there was the house and her son, of course. Angela thought she'd better go back and see to things.
How old is the boy now? What's his name?
Nigel. I don't know. 9, 10, 11, something like that. Angela's extraordinary, you know. She seems to have made up her mind that I ought to be killed. Mother's the same. It's funny. In the old days, when I was in the Argentine and in Spain, and there really were people gunning for me, no one cared a hoot. Now that I'm living in enforced safety and idleness, they seem to think it's rather disgraceful.
No new girls?
There was one called Poppet Green. You wouldn't have liked her. Now I'm having a very dull time. Alistair is a private at Brookwood. I went down to see them. He and Sonny have rented a horrible little villa on a golf course where he goes whenever he's off duty. Peter Passmaster has joined a very secret corps to go and fight in the Arctic. Now, suppose you remember Ambrose Silk.
Yes, I do.
Oh, wow. He's starting a new magazine to keep culture alive.
Poor Basil. You are out of the swim, aren't you? I hope you won't have to write the book for long. There isn't much for you to do here, I'm afraid. I suppose you could help me with the evacuees.
Mother said something about that.
I'm billeting officer for Moultrian District. It's quite hard work. And it's turned me into a figure of terror.
Terror, really?
People are scared stiff of me, in case I foist some terrible family on them. Whenever they see my car coming, they fly anywhere to escape me.
Your car?
Hmm.
How do you manage for petrol?
I get an allowance.
Do you indeed?
Actually, things have rather settled down now. I have some staying here, but I keep them well away from my quarters. I never see them, really. Darling Basil, it is lovely to have you here. Mm. We'll find somewhere cosy for you to sleep. And you and I can share this room during the day. It'll be just like old times. This can be the schoolroom and the nursery all in one.
But no Miss Penfold.
Miss Penfold? Miss Dragon, do you remember? Oh, what fun we'll have.
Mrs. Sothill.
Yes, Benson, what is it?
The Connollys, madam.
What?
The Connollys.
What about them?
They're back.
Oh, my God. Where are they?
They're in the lobby at the moment, madam.
Keep them there. No. Put them in the downstairs cloakroom and lock them in.
Yes.
How did they get here? Did someone bring them?
Presumably, madam. This note was pinned to one of them.
I see. Well, lock them up, Benson, and I'll attend to them by and by. They'll have to stay here tonight. We'll find somewhere for them in the village tomorrow.
It won't be easy, madam.
It won't be, Benson. Oh, God. I was feeling so happy. Let's have another drink.
Who are the Connollys?
The first influx of evacuees into Moorfrey had produced the Connollys, and they had appeared as an act of God, apparently without human agency. Their names did not appear on any list. They carried no credentials. No one was responsible for them. They were found, lurking under the seats of a carriage when the train was emptied. There was Doris, ripely pubescent, aged, by her own varied accounts, anything from 10 years to 18. An early and ingenious attempt to have her certified as an adult was frustrated by an inspecting doctor who put her at about 15. Doris had black bobbed hair, a large mouth, and dark pig's eyes. There was something of the Eskimo about her head. But her colouring was ruddy, and her manner more vivacious than is common among that respectable race. Her figure was stocky, her bust prodigious, and her gait, derived from the cinematograph, was designed to be alluring. Mickey, her junior, was of lighter build, a scrawny, scowling little boy, a child of few words and those for the most part foul. Marlene, the youngest, was simple and had inadequate control over her bodily functions. An appeal to have her certified imbecile was disallowed by the same inspecting doctor, who expressed an opinion that country life might work wonders with the child. There the three had stood, on the eve of the war in Moorfrey Parish Hall, one leering, one lowering, and one drooling, as unprepossessing a family as could be found in the kingdom. These were the Connollys.
They are quite impossible. Nobody's been able to tolerate them for more than a couple of days. I tried separating them at one time. Doris climbed out of the window of the house she was in and was lost for 2 days. Eventually, she was found in a barn 8 miles away, stupefied with cider. The same evening, Mickey bit the wife of the roadman he was billeted on, and the district nurse had to be called in. And Marlene had some species of fit or seizure.
I'm dying to see them.
You shall. Eventually, after a lot of trouble, I managed to get them placed in a sort of home, an institution. And I thought that was that. And now they're back.
I'll take it easy, Babs. Here, drink a drink. Yeah, you better read the letter.
You read it.
All right. Ah, dear Mrs. Sothill, I must inform you, the hostel is being closed down.
Oh, no.
Not really justifiable. Since the Connollys have no known address, they're being returned to you.
Oh, God, what am I to do? They can't stay here. Benson will leave for a start, I know he will. He threatened to do it when they were last here. I can see it in his eyes. He'll leave. And if he does, Freddy will never forgive me. And no one will take them in the village. They're notorious.
Oh, Babs, darling, you're blubbing.
Well, who wouldn't? I ask you, who wouldn't?
Don't be a chump, little sister. I'll fix it for you.
Swank. Chump yourself. Double chump.
Double chump with knobs on.
Oh, Basil, it's so nice to have you here. We could have such fun. And now...
Don't worry. I'll fix it. Cross my heart.
Well, I do believe if anyone could fix it, you could.
Freddy couldn't, could he?
Freddy isn't here.
I'm cleverer than Freddy. Babs, say I'm cleverer than Freddy.
I'm cleverer than Freddy. Sucks to you.
Babs, say you love me more than Freddy.
You love me more than Freddy. Double sucks.
Say I, Barbara, love you, Basil, more than him, Freddy.
I won't. I don't.
Do as I say.
I won't.
I'll pull your hair.
If you do, I shall call Miss Penfold.
Do as I say.
Basil, you're hurting. Miss Penfold. Miss Penfold, Basil's hurting me. Ow. Stop it, Basil. Stop
Missy.
It.
Missy.
Oh. Doris. How did you get out?
Mickey got us out. I can get out of anything.
Oh, yes. I remember. What do you want?
Marlene's queer again.
Oh, dear. Well, I'll come and deal with her.
He's nice, isn't he? What's his name?
Run along, Doris.
Having a lark, eh? I like a lark.
Doris!
You can pull my hair if you like, mister.
I wouldn't dream of it.
Dare say I shall. Dream a lot of funny things. Dare say I shall dream about you, mister. Go on, pull me hair, pull it out. I don't mind.
No, thank you, Doris. That is your name, I've been told, and indeed I've been told something about you. So go back to your sister, and Mrs. Sotter will come and attend to her.
Whatever you say. I love life.
You see, a problem child.
I've never seen anything quite like it. It may be unique.
Stop! Here, you, come you back here! I'll get my hands on you!
Oh, yeah, Grandad, and what would you do?
Oh, God.
No. Madam.
I know, Benson. I know. They have escaped and Marlene is querying it. Where are they now?
On the ground floor, madam.
I shall go and see to
them. Madam, I must talk to you.
Later, Benson. Later.
Benson.
Sir.
Close the door.
Sir.
Mrs. Sotter is very worried.
Sir?
She's afraid that you might be thinking of leaving.
Well, sir, I won't deny that when I saw those three devils on the doorstep, I said to myself, Benson, it's time for you to go.
Are you going, Benson? Mrs. Sotter is very concerned.
Oh, no, sir. I could never leave Moulfrey, and Mrs. Sotter ought to know that. Not with the Major away, too.
Good. My sister is very upset.
So am I, sir. You don't know these Connollys. They're not human.
Oh, we'll find a billet for them.
No one will take the Connollys in these parts, not if they were given £100.
Really? I see. I have an idea. I owe you some money, Benson.
You do, Mr. Basil. £12.10.
As much as that? Time I paid it back.
It is, sir.
I will, Benson.
I hope so, sir. I'm sure.
Not for £100, you say, the Connollys?
I'd lay odds on it, Mr. Basil.
Marlene is herself again. Fortunately, they hadn't been given much to eat before they were returned. Doris is mopping up. She seems suddenly docile. Benson, they seem quite tired, and I don't think they'll give much more trouble for the rest of the night. Put them in the large bedroom at the top of the back stairs, and I will sort them out presently.
Very good, madam.
Was there something you wanted to say to me?
No. Thank you, madam.
It's only a lull. I know that.
Don't worry.
Don't be silly. You're looking very pleased with yourself.
I've squared Benson for you. He won't be leaving.
Darling, how clever of you.
Had to give the old boy a fiver.
Liar.
All right, don't believe me.
I don't, knowing Benson and knowing you. The last time you stayed here, I had to pay him over £10 that you'd borrowed.
You paid him?
Yes. I was afraid he'd ask Freddy.
The old double-crosser. Anyway, he's staying.
Well, thinking it over, I knew he would. Still, it's good news. Though it doesn't solve the Connolly problem.
I'll get them settled tomorrow.
It's hopeless. No one will take them.
But you can force people, can't you? You have powers of coercion.
Yes, but I can't possibly use them.
I can. I shall enjoy it. What do you know about the Harknesses of Old Mill House, North Grappling?
Middle-aged people, I think. I don't know them. It's a very pretty house.
Mm.
Rather too pretty. Why?
They're advertising for boarders.
He retired from some sort of job abroad. And I think she's musical.
Mm.
Rather a precious pair, I gather.
Paying guests accepted in lovely modernised 15th-century mill. Ideal surroundings for elderly or artistic people wishing to avoid war worries. 6 guineas weekly. Just the place for the Connollys.
Basil, you can't.
Can't I just? I'll take the Connollys over there this morning. Do you know, this is the first piece of serious war work that I've done so far.
Hello, Missy.
Oh, Doris.
Mm.
Where are Mickey and Marlene?
Outside. They're all right. They found the snowman, the other kids made, and they're mucking him up.
Run along and join them.
I want to stay here with you and him.
I bet you do. No such luck. You go and help muck up the snowman.
Oh, that's a kid's game. I'm not a kid, mister. Why wouldn't you pull my hair last night? Was it because you thought me hair had nits? I haven't any more. The nurse combed them all out at the hostel and put oil on. That's why it's a bit greasy.
I don't pull girls' hair.
You do? I saw you. You pulled hers. He's your boy, isn't he?
He's my brother, Doris.
But you fancy him, don't you? Oh, so.
Doris, go and fetch your brother and sister and have them outside the front door in half an hour. If you do that, I might take you for a drive in the car.
All right, mister. We'll be there.
She really is an atrocious child.
I think I know how to handle her.
What are you up to? What's all this about a drive in the car?
I said I'd shift the Connollys, and I will. Pass the marmalade.
Mister, why can't I sit in front with you?
You've got to keep the other two in order.
They'll be good.
That's what you think.
They'll be good if I tell them, mister.
Well, then why aren't they?
Because I tell them to be bad. In fun, you know. Where are we going?
I'm finding a new home for you, Doris.
Away from you?
Far away from me.
Oh, mister, listen, Mickey, I'm really bad. No, Marlene, I ain't silly. Are you, Marlene?
Not very silly.
She can be glowing if she wants to be, if I tell her. I'll see you, Mr. Blythe. You let her stay with you and I'll see the kids behave themselves.
And what about you, Doris?
Well, I don't have to behave. I'm not a kid. Is it on?
It is not.
You're going to take us away?
You bet I am.
And just you wait and see what we give and where we're going.
I shan't wait and see, but I've no doubt I shall hear about it in good time. And here we are, I fancy. Very picturesque, isn't it? Very pretty.
Jesus! You aren't going to leave us here.
Now listen. When I'm in that house, you'll behave and you will see to it that the other two behave. If you do as I tell you, there might be some fun. If you don't do as I tell you, there'll be no fun at all. All right?
All right, mister.
It was just an idea we had, Mr. Seal. We felt a little ashamed here with so much space and beauty. We did think, perhaps, that if we heard of a few people like ourselves, the same simple tastes. As a matter of fact, we have one newcomer with us already. I don't think we really want to take anyone else, do we, Agnes?
It was just an idle thought. Green thought in a green place. Yeah,
this is not a guest house, you know. We take in paying guests. Quite a different thing.
Well, it's not for myself that I was inquiring.
Well, that's different. I dare say we might take in one or two more if they were really...
If we were sure they were the kind of people who would be happy here.
Exactly. It is essentially a happy house.
I can see that it is.
Are your friends who were thinking of coming here artistic people?
No, I don't think you could call them that.
They don't write?
No, I don't think so.
May I ask, what are your friends?
Well, I suppose you might call them evacuees.
Oh. Townsfolk, eh? In search of sanctuary.
Exactly.
Well, they will find it here, eh, Agnes?
I like to think of this beautiful old house still being of use in the world. After all, it was built for use. It was a flour mill. Hundreds of years ago, it gave bread to the people. Then, with the change of times, it was left forlorn and derelict. Then it became a home, but it was still out of the world, shut off from the life of the people. And now it comes into its own again, fulfilling a need. I feel sometimes I can see the old house smiling to itself and hear the old timbers whispering. They thought we were no use. They thought we were old stick-in-the-muds, but they can't get on without us, these busy go-ahead people. They come back to us when they're in trouble.
Agnes was always a poet. I have had to be the practical housewife. You saw our terms in the advertisement.
Yes.
They may have seemed to you a little heavy, but you must understand that our guests live exactly as we do ourselves. We live simply, but we like our comforts, fires, the garden. In the summer, we take our meals under the old mulberry tree. Music. Every week we have chamber music. There are certain imponderabilia at the old mill, which, to be crude, have their market value. I don't think that in the circumstances 6 guineas is too much to ask.
We pay 8 shillings and 6 pence a week.
Eight shillings and sixpence. I'm afraid there's been some misunderstanding.
Perhaps I should have told you at once, Mr. Harkness. I am the billeting officer. I have 3 children for you in the car outside.
Children? If evacuees here? This is ridiculous. I shall telephone Mrs. Sothill.
I am Mrs. Sothill's brother.
Oh, but really, you can't be serious. There must be 100 cottagers who would be glad to take these children in.
Not these children. Besides, you know, this is a war for democracy. It looks awfully bad if the rich seem to be shirking their responsibilities.
Rich? It's only because we find it so hard to make both ends meet that we take paying guests at all.
You've seen for yourself this lovely old house and the kind of life we live here. Don't you feel there's something different here? Something precious that could so easily be killed?
It's just the kind of influence these children need. They're rather short on culture at the moment.
But, Mr. Seal...
Mr. Harkness, you may or may not be aware of the fact, but as billeting officer, I do possess powers of compulsion. There is really no future in protesting. I shall now go out to the car and fetch the children.
What are we to do?
I shall go and see the county authorities. I shall write to the Board of Education and the Lord Lieutenant. I shall tell them how impossible this is. This is a most unsuitable place for children.
They might fall into the stream and be drowned.
And there's no school within 4 miles.
They're too old to deal with children.
Well, it won't be for long.
Here we are. I'm afraid they haven't any luggage. This is Doris, this is Mickey, and that is little Marlene. I expect after a day or two you'll wonder how you ever got on without them. We meet that over and over again in our work. People are a little shy of children to begin with and soon want to adopt them permanently. Goodbye, kids.
Goodbye, mister.
Thank you, Doris. Have a good time. Goodbye, Mrs. Harkness, Mr. Harkness. We shall drop in from time to time just to see that everything's all right.
Doris.
Oh, yeah. Mister, she's gonna be sick.
Basil drove back through the lanes with a deep interior warmth, which defied the gathering blizzard. That night there was an enormous fall of snow. Telephone wires were down. The lane to North Grappling became impassable, and for 8 days the old mill was cut off physically, as for so long it had been cut in spirit, from all contact with the modern world. 8 days before the roads were cleared and Mr. Harkness presented himself at Morfrey.
My wife is prostrate.
And your paying guest?
Left this morning, soon as the road was cleared.
I do hope Doris is making herself useful about the house.
Mr. Seal, I can't stand it. We neither of us can. You must take those children away. We've come to the end.
Well, you surely wouldn't suggest sending them back to Birmingham to be bombed.
There is nothing would delight me more.
Tut, tut. You do yourself an injustice. Anyway, it's against the law. I should like to help you, but, what can you suggest?
I thought of giving them weed killer.
Yes, that would be one way, but do you think Marlene would keep it down?
Or hanging?
Come, come, Mr. Harkness, this is mere wishful thinking. We must be more practical.
Everything I have thought of has had death in it. Ours or theirs.
I'm sure there must be a way. Indeed, something you said when we last met has stayed in my mind, and... May I put something to you?
Yes.
You said, speaking of the Connollys, and before you met them, that there must be 100 cottagers who'd be glad to take the children in. And it is true that to poorer families, the billeting allowance, meagre as it is, would not be unwelcome. And where the children are nice and affectionate, people are often glad to have them. One couldn't call the Connollys nice and affectionate.
Oh, God.
And destructive, too. Well, I needn't tell you that. Now, if the meagre allowance paid by the government were to be in some way supplemented, follow me?
You mean I might pay someone to take them? Well, of course I will. Anything. Almost anything. How much shall I offer? How shall I set about it?
Leave it to me. What's it worth to you to have those children moved?
Well, I should think £1 a week would make all the difference to a poor family.
How about a lump sum? People, well, poor people, that is, will often be dazzled by the offer of a lump sum who wouldn't consider an allowance.
£25.
Oh, come, come, Mr. Harkness. That's what you propose paying over 6 months. The war is going to last longer than that.
30. I can't go higher than 30.
Yes, I dare say I could find someone to take them to that. Of course, you realize this is all highly irregular.
Oh, yes, Mr. Cecilia, I realize that. Will you fetch those children today?
Today?
Without fail. The check will be waiting for you. I will make it out to bearer.
Now, Doris, you can sit beside me as long as you behave yourself, and as long as Mickey and Marlene do, too. Understand?
Hey, that you brats behave, or I'll turn your houses for you. I'll be all right, mister, if I tell them.
Doris, I think this is a very good game of yours, making the kids be a nuisance, but we're going to play it my way in future. When you come to the house where I live, you're to behave always, see? I may take you to other houses from time to time. There, you can usually be as bad as you like, but not until I give you the word. See?
Okay, partner. Give us a cig.
I'm beginning to like you, Doris.
I love you. I love you more than anyone I ever seen.
Since the children came back from the Harknesses, they've been extraordinarily well-behaved. I can't understand it.
Mr. Harkness said they were in ponderabilia at Mill House. Perhaps it's that.
Basil, you're up to something. I wish I knew what it was.
Just war work, Babs.
Slimy snake.
I'm not.
Crawly spider.
That branch of the army in which Alastair Trumpington was serving stopped work at 12 o'clock on Saturdays, when, to all intents and purposes, hostilities might be said to have come to an end until the following Monday. Alastair and Sonia did not go away for these weekends, but spent them, mostly in bed, in the furnished house they had taken nearby. On this particular Saturday, Alastair and the rest of his platoon were occupied for most of the morning in grappling with the intricacies of the Bren gun.
So, the gun fires two rounds and stops again. What do you look at now? Trumpington?
Gas regulator off with the magazine. Press, pull back, press. Number two gun clear.
That all, Trumpington?
Yes. I think so, Corporal.
You have left something out, Trumpington. What's he forgotten?
Butt strap!
Quite right. He's forgotten the butt strap. Down again, I'm afraid, Trumpington.
Oh, dear. Sorry.
All right. That's it for this morning. Dismiss! Trumpington, a word with you.
Yes, Corporal.
The CO wants to see you.
But it's 12 o'clock. My wife is meeting me.
Trumpington, this is the army. The country is at war, and the CO wants to see you. Jump to it. At the double!
Sorry I'm late, darling. The CO sent for me.
Darling, what had you done?
Oh, nothing. He wanted to put me forward for a commission.
Darling, what did you say?
I said no, of course.
Didn't he want to know why?
Yes. I was tempted to tell him that it was because I didn't want to meet the officers on social terms. But I felt that might be misunderstood, so I just said I preferred things as they were. He asked me if I was afraid of responsibility. I didn't say anything, so he let it go at that.
You must be quite a puzzle to them, darling.
Yes, I suppose I am. But I don't think I can tell them what I really feel. In fact, I'm not at all clear in my own mind. It's just, well, I've never done anything for the country. It is my country, after all. And though we're always broke, we have lots of money, really, and lots of fun. Maybe if we hadn't had so much fun, there wouldn't be a war. The fact is, we've had a pretty easy life up to now. It's probably quite good for one to have a change sometimes. I don't know. I don't want to talk about the army. I want to be with you.
Darling, how nice. I've been shopping in Woking, and I've got all kinds of delicious food and all the weekly papers. There's a film there we might go and see.
Oh, we might. But if we go out, I shall have to wear uniform. As long as I stay in the house, I can wear civvies. That's a great treat, believe me. Anyway, the weather's going to be foul.
Of course, darling. There's all this evening and all tomorrow. Isn't it lovely?
Hmm.
You know, Alistair, you're quite right. You and I always seem to have fun, don't we? Wherever we are.
This was February 1940, in that strangely cosy interlude between peace and war, when there was leave every weekend and plenty to eat and drink and plenty to smoke. When France stood firm on the Maginot Line, and the Finns stood firm in Finland, and everyone said what a cruel winter they must be having in Germany. During one of these weekends, Sonia conceived a child. Ambrose Silk had allowed himself to be drafted into the Ministry of Information, but his position as the sole representative of atheism in the religious department was not, at this stage of the war, one of great importance, and he spent most of his time in Mr. Bentley's office, which had become an enclave of culture in a barbaric world. It was here that the Ivory Tower was first discussed.
The idea is to produce a brand new paper. Journal? Quarterly? I'm not quite sure about that aspect. But the aims are clear enough. It is to be art for art's sake. It is to be back to the lily and the lotus. Hence the title, The Ivory Tower. What do you think?
A kind of new yellow book.
Oh, Geoffrey, how can you be so unkind?
My dear Ambrose...
That's just what they'll call it.
Who will?
Parsnip, Pimpernel, Poppet, and all the rest. They'll say that we are deserting the workers' cause.
I'm not aware that I ever joined it. I claim to be one of the very few living liberals.
We have allowed ourselves to be dominated by economists.
I haven't.
For years now, we have allowed ourselves to think of nothing but concrete mixers and tractors.
I haven't. I've thought a great deal about Nollikins.
Well, I've had enough. I was never a party member, you know.
Party?
Communist party. I was what they call in that horrible jargon, a fellow traveller.
Ah.
Geoffrey, they do the most brutal things, don't they, to communists who try to leave the party.
So I've heard.
You don't think they do that to fellow travellers, do you?
I don't expect so.
But they might.
Oh, yes, they might.
Oh, dear. They have underground organisations, don't they? Do you think they'd get hold of us?
Who?
The fellow travellers.
Really, it's too ridiculous to talk like this about fellow travellers and the underground. It sounds like strap hangers on the Bacon Railway.
It's all very well for you to laugh. You were never one of them.
In the planning of the Connolly campaign, Basil made great use of a leather-bound volume that he had found in Barbara's desk. This was the address book that Freddie's mother had compiled and which Barbara had kept up to date. The majority of the names to be found within its covers were marked with the initials GPO. GPO, in this context, stood for Garden Party Only. These were mainly people of late middle age who, on retirement from the city and abroad, had bought the smaller manor houses and the larger rectories. Through them, the tribute of empire flowed gently into the agricultural countryside. Tithe barns were converted into village halls. The Boy Scouts had a new bell tent and the district nurse a motor car. The old box pews were taken out of the churches, the galleries demolished, the royal arms and the Ten Commandments moved from behind the altar and replaced with screens of blue damask, supported at the four corners with gilt serum angels. The homes of these good people were cherished, tended and maintained with love and affection. Their gardens were immaculate. The lawns were close mown, fertilized and weeded, and from their splendid surfaces rose clumps of pampas grass and yucca. It was this unfamiliar world that Basil contemplated as a marauder might look down from the hills into the fat pastures below. After the successful engagement with the Harknesses, Basil took Doris into the nearest town and fed her liberally on fried fish and chipped potatoes. Afterwards, he took her to the cinema and allowed her to hold his hand in a fierce and sticky grasp throughout the length of two deeply sentimental films, and brought her back to Moffrey in a state of entranced docility.
You don't like blondes, do you?
Yes, very much.
More than brunettes?
I'm not particular.
Yes, I like goes to like. She's dark.
Who?
You call your sister.
Doris, you must get this idea out of your head. Mrs. Sothill is my sister.
You won't sweat on her?
Certainly not.
Then you do like blondes.
Oh, me.
Next day, Doris disappeared alone into the village, returned mysteriously with a small parcel, and remained hidden all the morning. Just as Basil and Barbara were sitting down to lunch, she reappeared, dramatically standing in the doorway, her head in a towel. Slowly, she removed the towel and uncovered a damp mop of hair, which was in part pale yellow, in part its original black, and in part mottled in every intervening shade.
Good heavens, child, what have you done to your hair?
Do you like it, mister? I'll give it another go this afternoon.
I wouldn't. I'd leave it just as it is.
You like it?
I think it's fine.
Not too streaky?
Not a bit too streaky. Run along now, Doris. Mrs. Sotter and I are about to have lunch.
Ta-ta, mister.
Basil, we must do something about that poor child's head before we pass her on.
Certainly not. It suits her. If anything was needed to complete the horror of Doris's appearance, this morning's work has done it.
But, Basil...
I was looking at your address book this morning. What do you know of the graces of the old rectory, Adderford?
It's a pretty little house. He's a painter.
Bohemian?
Oh, not the least. Very refined. Portraits of children in watercolour and pastel.
Pastel? It sounds suitable.
She's rather delicate, I believe.
Perfect.
The Connollys stayed 2 days at the old rectory, Adderford, and earned £20. London was full again. Those who had left in a hurry returned. Those who had made arrangements to go after the first air raid remained. Margot Metroland shut her home and moved to the Ritz, opened her home and moved back, decided that, after all, she really preferred the Ritz, and shut her home this time, though she did not know it, forever. No servant ever folded back the shutters from the long windows. They remained barred until late in the year, when the bombs really fell on London, and they were blown into Curzon Street. The furniture was still under dust sheets when it was splintered and burned. Sir Joseph Mannering was appointed to a position of trust and dignity. He was often to be seen with generals now, and sometimes with an admiral. He continued to call on Lady Seal.
Basil is at Moultrie.
Is he indeed?
He's helping Barbara with her evacuees. He says the army is very full at the moment. Things will be much easier when we've had some casualties.
Yes. Well, I have heard that theory promulgated. But I must say, Cynthia, I do not feel there are going to be many casualties.
Really, Joe? Do help yourself to sherry.
Thank you. I was talking to a very interesting fellow at the Bistek, who knows a German professor of history. This professor is now in England, and they think a great deal of him at the Foreign Office.
Oh.
He says there are 50 million Germans ready to declare peace tomorrow on our terms. It's just a question of outing the fellows in government.
Dear Joe, you always know the most encouraging things.
Ah.
In Poppet Green's studio, parties were being held again.
Ambrose has turned fascist.
Not really.
He's working for the government and the Ministry of Information, and they've bribed him to start a new paper.
Is it a fascist paper?
You bet it is.
I heard about this. I hear it's to be called the Ivory Tower.
Oh, that's fascist, if you like.
Escapist.
Trotskyist.
Ambrose never really had the proletarian outlook. No. I can't think why we put up with him as long as we did. No. Parsnip always said he was too bendable.
A very shakeable reed was Pimpernel's phrase.
Yeah.
In pursuit of his Connolly campaign, Basil chose his objectives from the extreme quarters of the Moultrie billeting area. He struck north and east, and then south to Grantley Green, where the land of spur and valley fell away and flattened out into a plain of cider orchards and market gardens. In Grantley Green was the old malt house, and standing in the doorway was a very lovely young woman.
Yes, what can I do for you?
Ah, well, I want to see Mr. and Mrs. Prettyman Partridge.
They're dead. At least one is. The other sold us the house last summer. Is that all, please? I must shut the door or freeze to death.
May I come in?
Well, all right, if you must. Is it something to buy or forms to fill in or just a subscription? If it's the first two, I can't help, because my husband's away with the yeomanry. If it's a subscription, I've got some money upstairs. I've been told to give the same as Mrs. Andrews, the doctor's wife. If you haven't been to her yet, come back when you found out what she's good for.
It's none of those, actually.
Well, what is it, then? And why aren't you in khaki?
Work of national importance. I'm the district billeting officer. I'm looking for a suitable home for 3 evacuated children.
Well, I hope you don't call this suitable. I ask you, I can't even look after Bill's sheepdog. Can't even look after myself very well. What should I do with 3 children?
These are rather exceptional children.
Well, they'd have to be. Anyway, I'm not having any, thank you. There was a funny little woman called Harkness came to call here yesterday. I do think people might let up on calling in wartime, don't you? She told me the most gruesome things about some children who were sent to her. They had to bribe the man. Literally bribe him with money to get the brutes removed.
These are the same children.
Well, for God's sake, why pick on me?
Well, actually, I picked on the Prettyman Partridges. I don't even know your name.
I don't know yours.
Basil Seal.
Basil Seal? How very funny.
Why funny?
Only that I used to hear a lot about you once. Weren't you a friend of a girl called Mary Nichols?
Was I? Mary Nichols?
Well, she used to talk a lot about you. All the time, in fact. She was much older than me. I used to think her wonderful when I was about 16. You met her on a ship coming from Copenhagen.
I dare say. Well, I have been to Copenhagen.
So you're Basil Seal.
Yeah.
Well, I never.
Aren't you going to offer me a glass of sherry on the strength of Mary Nichols?
Well, I don't think there's anything in the house. Bill's away, you see. He's got some wine downstairs in the cellar, but the door's locked.
I expect we could open it.
Oh, I wouldn't do that. Bill would be furious.
Well, I don't suppose he'd be best pleased to come home on leave and find the Connolly family hacking up his house. By the way, you haven't seen them yet, have you? No, they're outside in the car. I'll bring them in.
Oh, please don't.
Oh, well, do take a look at them through the window.
Good God. Mrs. Harkness wasn't far wrong. I thought she was laying it on thick.
It cost her £30 to get rid of them.
Oh, but I haven't got anything like that. Bill makes me an allowance out of his pay. It comes in monthly. It's practically all I've got.
Well, I'll take payment in kind.
You mean the sherry?
I'd like a glass of sherry very much. I'm very good at locked doors, you know. All we need is some sort of leverage. Now, this poker will do. Made for it, in fact, yes. Now, where is this door?
Oh, gosh.
Now, then, is there a light? Yes, there is. I'll go first, shall I?
I shall have to get that lock mended.
Well, I wouldn't bother, not for the time being. Now then, what have we here? Some hock, some claret, port?
They're mostly wedding presents.
Ah, and here's the sherry. Now, all we need is a corkscrew and some glasses.
Upstairs in the pantry. I don't know what I'll say to Bill about all this.
You'll think of something. I'm sure you can be very persuasive. And be honest, you're actually enjoying this, aren't you?
You're very bold.
Is that what Mary Nichols told you about me?
She told me a lot about you.
Let's get those glasses. Then we'll drink a toast.
A toast?
To Mary Nichols and Bill, of course. Absent friends. I'm afraid I've had to bring the Connollys back.
Oh, darling, no. Why?
The Prettyman Partridges are dead.
Oh, dear. You've been a long time, haven't you?
Well, I met a friend, or at least the friend of a friend. She and her husband have bought the house. She's a very nice girl. I think you ought to do something about her.
What's her name?
Do you know? I never discovered. But her husband's called Bill. He's away at the moment and joined Freddie's regiment as a trooper.
Who's she a friend of?
Mary Nichols.
Never heard of her.
An old friend of mine years ago, Copenhagen. Honestly, Babs, you'll like the girl. She's rather lonely at the moment. She needs jollying up.
Well, ask her to dinner.
I have. The trouble is she hasn't got a car. Do you mind if I go and fetch her?
Darling, we simply haven't got the petrol.
We can use the special allowance.
Darling, I can't. This has nothing to do with billeting.
Believe it or not, Babs, it has.
Peter Pastmaster's regiment had returned to barracks in London. After months of secret training, their expedition never sailed. With time on his hands, but with the prospect of action always present as the basis for any future plans, he began to suffer from pangs of dynastic conscience. He raised the matter with his mother, Lady Metroland, over tea at the Ritz.
Mama?
Yes?
Do you think I ought to marry?
Ooh.
Anyone?
I don't see that you can say anyone ought to marry anyone.
Oh, don't confuse me. What I mean is, supposing I get killed.
Then I don't see a great deal in it for the poor girl.
Well, there is the question of the line, the title. I don't want to be the last of the Metrolands.
Oh, well, then you'd better marry, darling. Do you know any girls?
I don't think I do.
I don't think I do either, come to think of it. Well, I believe Emma Granchester's second girl's very pretty. Try her. Oh, there are probably lots of others. I'll make inquiries.
Thank you.
Oh, it is nice to have you back again. Have you seen any of your old friends?
None of them are in London. Alistair and Sonia are down in Brookwood. Basil's skulking in the country somewhere. I suspect he's in Morphley with Barbara. And Angela's vanished without trace.
Not with Basil.
Oh, no, not with Basil. Nobody knows where she is.
Angela Lyon was, in fact, in London.
Her husband, Cedric, from whom she was separated, was in the army. Their son was at his private school, transported at the outbreak of the war from the East Coast to Dartmoor. She sat in the place she called home, a large glass of whiskey and water in her hand, and listened to the wireless news from Germany. Home was a service flat, and as smart and non-committal as herself, a set of five large rooms high up in a large new block in Grosvenor Square. Angela seldom went beyond her door, except once or twice a week to visit the cinema. She always went alone. She had taken to wearing spectacles of smoked glass. She wore them indoors as well as out. She wore them in the subdued, concealed lighting of her drawing room as she sat, hour by hour, with the radio standing by the decanter and glass at her elbow. She wore them when she looked in the mirror. Only Granger, her maid, knew what was wrong with Mrs. Lyon, and she only knew the shell of it. She knew the number of empty bottles in the little pantry, and she saw Mrs. Lyon's face when the blackout was taken down in the morning. But being a dull and sensible girl, she was spared the knowledge of what went on in Mrs. Lyon's mind. As the winter drew to a close, Freddy's yeomanry prepared to return to its base. He phoned Barbara at Morfrey.
Good news, we're coming home.
Freddy, how splendid. When?
I arrive tomorrow. I'm bringing Jack Cathcart. He's our second in command now. We're going to lay out a camp. We'll stay at Morfrey while we're doing it.
Lovely.
We'll be bringing servants, so we'll be self-supporting as far as that goes. There'll be a couple of sergeants. Benson can look after them. And I say, Barbara, what do you say to having the camp in the park?
Oh, no, Freddy, for God's sake.
We could open up the saloon and have the mess there. I could live in. You'd have to have old Colonel Sprogg in and possibly Cathcart too, but you wouldn't mind that, would you?
Please, Freddy, don't decide anything in a hurry.
Well, I've practically decided. See you tomorrow. Is Basil still with you?
Yes.
Well, I can't see him getting on terribly well with Cathcart. Couldn't you give him a gentle hint? Well, goodbye, darling.
Oh. Basil, you've got to go away.
Yes, I know. How did you know?
Freddy's coming home.
Oh, damn Freddy. Who cares for him? Bill's coming home.
Oh, of course he would be. What does she say?
Believe it or not, she's as pleased as punch. No more Grantley Green for me.
Ungrateful beast. Never wrote that book either.
No. But we've had a lovely time, haven't we, Babs? Quite like old days.
Chump.
Double chump.
I suppose you'll want some money.
I could always do with some more, but as it happens, I'm quite rich at the moment.
Basil, how?
One thing and another. I'll tell you what I'll do before I go. I'll get the Connollys off your hands again. I'm afraid I've been neglecting them, rather, in the last few weeks.
On his way to and from Grantley Green and the happy hours spent there, Basil had noticed a pretty stucco house standing in paddock and orchard, which seemed exactly suited to harbour the Connollys. Basil was getting lax, and, confident now in his methods, no longer bothered himself with much research before choosing his victims. The stucco house was marked down, and next day he packed the Connollys into the car and drove over to do his business.
Come in, Mr. Seal. I know about you. You're Mrs. Sothill's brother at Molfrey. I don't know Mrs. Sothill, but I know all about her. I don't know Major Sothill, but I know about him. As you will have noticed, I have a gammy leg, motor racing before the war. That's why I'm not in khaki. Sit down and tell me what I can do for you.
I'm the billeting officer for this district.
Are you indeed? Well, I'm very interested to meet you. Do go on.
Well, as the war continues, Mr. Todhunter, the potential threat to families living in cities increases. But it is getting harder and harder to find billets, particularly since the anti-aircraft batteries come to South Grapley and quartered their men in the cottages there. It does create a bad impression, you know, if the bigger houses do not seem to be doing their share. This is a big house, Mr. Todhunter, and a very handsome one, if I may say so.
Thank you.
Now, I must tell you that as billeting officer, I do possess powers of coercion. Naturally, I'm reluctant to employ them, but they are there, if necessary. You understand?
I understand perfectly.
Good. Outside in my car, there are three children. The Connolly family. Two girls and a boy. They cannot be separated. It has been tried. And I'll be frank with you, they can be something of a handful. But this is a matter of some urgency. I must place them today, before lunch. Well, now.
Suppose I don't want these hard cases of yours. I believe there is a fine payable for refusing to accept evacuees. Suppose I prefer to pay that fine.
Well, you could do that. That is your privilege. It could be expensive. May I put something to you?
Please do.
There are poorer families to whom the billeting allowance, meagre as it is, would not be unwelcome. At the same time, poor people value their household gods as much, perhaps even more, than the rich, and children can be destructive. Now, if the meagre allowance paid by the government were to be in some way supplemented... Do you follow me?
Every inch of the way. So that's how it's done. Thank you. That was most instructive, very instructive indeed. I like the bit about the household gods.
In more cultured circles, I say lares et penates.
Household gods is good enough. Household gods is very good indeed. What do you generally count on raising?
£5 is the worst, 35 the best I've had so far.
So far? Do you hope to carry on long with this trade?
I don't see why not.
Don't you? Well, I'll tell you something. Do you know who's billeting officer in this district? I am. Mrs. Sothill's district ends at the main road. You're muscling in on my territory when you come past the crossing. Now, what have you got to say for yourself?
Do you mean to say that Grantley Green is yours?
Certainly.
The old malt house is yours?
Yes. What do you know about the old malt house?
Nothing. Nothing. I know the lady who lives there, slightly. How damned funny.
Why funny?
I can't tell you. But it is exquisitely funny.
Hmm. So, I'll ask you to keep to your own side of the road in future. Not that I'm ungrateful for your visit. It's given me some interesting ideas. I always felt there was money in this racket somehow, but I could never quite see my way to get it. Now I know. I'll remember about the household gods.
No, wait a minute. It isn't as easy as all that, you know. It isn't just a matter of having the idea. You have to have the Connollys, too.
What?
Well, you don't understand it, I don't understand it, but the fact remains that quite a number of otherwise sane human beings are perfectly ready to take children in. They like them. Makes them feel virtuous. They like the little pattering of feet about the house. I know it sounds screwy, but it's the truth. I've seen it again and again.
So have I. There's no sense in it, but it's a fact. They make household gods of them.
Now, the Connollys are something quite special. No one could make a household god of them. Come and have a look. Come on, Doris. Out with you. You too, Mickey, Marlene. I want you to meet Mr. Todhunter.
Yes. Well, I see what you mean.
Take that scarf off your head, Doris. Show him your hair.
Okay, mister.
Good God. They are special, Seal. I grant you that. If it's not a rude question, what did you pay for them?
I got them free, but I put a lot of money into them since. Fried fish and cinemas.
How did you get the girl's hair that way?
She did it herself, for love.
Oh, they certainly are special.
You haven't seen anything yet. You see them in action.
I can imagine it. Well, what do you want for them?
£5 a leg, and that's cheap. I'm thinking of closing down the business anyhow.
Done.
Well, children, this is your new headquarters.
Oh, but you muck him about.
Well, that's up to Mr. Todhunter. I'm handing you over to him now. You'll be working for him in future.
Ain't we never going to buy with you again?
Never again, Doris. But you'll find you like Mr. Todhunter just as much. He's very handsome, isn't he?
Not as handsome as you.
No, perhaps not, but he's got a fine little red moustache, hasn't he?
Yes, lovely moustache. But he's shorter than you.
Damn it, girl. Don't you realize there's a war on? We've all got to make sacrifices. as many a little girl would be grateful for Mr. Todhunter.
Look here, Seal. I'll just go in, make out that check. Then you can be on your way.
Mister, come in Mookie's house up just a bit.
Yes, I don't see why not. Just a bit, Mickey. And Marlene, if you don't feel well, don't try to hold it back.
All right, mister.
Mister, kiss me once before you go.
No, Doris. Mr. Todhunter wouldn't like it. He's terribly jealous.
I say?
Violently so.
Oh, I love jealous men.
So the scourge of the Maltry area moved south into the apple-growing country and the market gardens. All over the park at Maltry, under the great elms, the yeomanry set up their tents, and the officers established their mess in the Grinling Gibbon saloon. Bill returned to the malt house and to his wife. He was quite satisfied with the explanation he was given about the cellar door, and he and Sally spent many blissful, uxorious hours together. The last of the snows vanished, and the weeks of winter melted away with them. Presently, oblivious of the hazards of war, the swallows returned to their ancestral building grounds, and Basil returned to London.
The part of Basil Seal was played by Simon Cadell. Doris, Leslie Sharp. Barbara, Jenny Howe. Harkness, Timothy Bateson. Mrs. Harkness, Oriel Smith. Todhunter, David King. Sally, Tara Dominic. Freddie, Brian Miller. Ambrose Silk, Steve Hodson. Bentley, Hugh Dixon. Poppet, Joanna Myers. Peter Pastmaster, Michael Cochran. Margot Metroland, Mary Wimbush. Alastair, Simon Treves. Sonia, Jane Whittenshaw. Lady Seal, Elizabeth Kelly. Sir Joseph Mannering, Jack May. With Michael Kilgariff and Danny Schiller. The narrator was Tony Britton. The pianist was David King. Evelyn Waugh's Put Out More Flags was dramatised by Dennis Hawthorne and directed by Jane Morgan.